Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 290. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens is not here, but Phil Wilson is.
Wow. You almost called me Graham, didn't you?
No, it's Phil.
Hello.
I almost introduced Graham, and he's not here.
Yeah. Well, Graham is here in spirit because he would like that music.
He would. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're in one of the two most innovative, friendly states in the nation.
You didn't know that?
Well, I knew that,
and I've lived in both states. That.
I thought we were in the most friendly, innovative, because, you know.
Well, we're friendly, that's for sure.
We put together, we're Minnesota Nice, but we're, you know, we put on this wonderful, you know, 4 months out of the year that people love.
Which we know is winter. Well, anyway. So there's a woman who's a professor at strategy
I thought it was strategery. I'm sorry.
Something like that at a university.
Somewhere.
Anyway.
He's trying to find the article.
Washington University Olin Business School.
There we go. Thank St. you Louis. So much. But she wrote an article for the Harvard Business Review about what the two most innovation-friendly states have in common. And I went through this, and it was kind of interesting.
Not weather.
That's right. But she compared the effectiveness of R&D investment of all public firms across all 50 states using a measure called RQ or research quotient. And so there was that. And then the second thing was there was one important institutional feature shared by the two top states, California and Minnesota. Both states restrict the enforcement of non-compete agreements. And it was that second one that quote-unquote experts were talked about in a Star Tribune article saying, well, you know, the non-competes weren't legislated and blah, blah, blah. And she came back with, yes, but they're really not enforced. And that's one of the reasons that we're so innovative. But here's the thing. That first part, the effectiveness of R&D investment of all public firms. I mean, you think, well, wait a minute. You got Medtronic, you've got 3M, you've got all of these major corporations here. That's why there's so much R&D investment, right?
Right.
Absolutely.
And so does that necessarily translate into people spinning off because they're not worried about their non-competes and starting all kinds of companies? Now, I'd argue that's happening in the medical device space, but what about other spaces?
I don't know. It could have a lot to do with it. I don't know. But it is, I mean, it's a logical assumption when you try to look at across, you know, the variables in all the states. We just so happen to share a sort of a fast and loose interpretation of non-competes. I don't think it's the only factor, but it is definitely a factor, I think. It could be a factor. How about that? How about it could be a factor?
Yeah. I mean, it's still good news that we're in the top rankings,
right.
It's one of those things where, you know, you see the jobs report come out. Oh my God, you know, the jobs are accelerating and it's the highest it's been since 2007 and blah, blah, blah. And then you read the article and there's all these caveats in there. And you think, well, all right. So it's not like there's some breakthrough and we're suddenly going to be able to pour water in our gas tanks and drive our cars. I mean, or there's somebody invented a holodeck. So,
well, there you go. Every quarter we have to hear Steve mention the holodeck.
Yes. Until the damn thing comes out.
Every quarter.
I want one badly.
Yeah,
anyway,
I know you do.
So we're not going to get one because, Tim, you put this in here, right? The Minnesota CIO stepped down.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah.
I couldn't find any real explanation as to why she stepped down other than maybe she's tired. I don't know.
Maybe Minshew kind of did her in.
Maybe.
Well, I don't know. I suppose it could. I suppose you could get pretty exhausted after trying to explain that for years. So, or for a year.
Well, it wasn't a shining example of great IT. But maybe she had nothing to do with it. I don't know.
Well, the other thing, though, too, is having some experience when I was at Vignette working with state-level people in IT, it's hard to get really great IT people to work at the state level. know, so they do a lot of outsourcing, and so there's a lot of management of consulting organizations and so on. It's got to be just really tedious. So
yeah,
I'm sure that's why she probably bailed.
Well, she was finished with her Office 365 implementation, which they did earlier in the year. It's a big success.
Finally got that done.
Finally got it done. She said, you know what? It's no more fun for me.
No, actually, they were done with their FileMaker implementation for
right,
state yeah. databases.
Right. The DMV is running FileMaker. And it's in Mac OS 9 as well.
Yeah, I heard that.
On an old Quadra. It's kind of like a Quadra running. Yeah.
But they can print on their laser writers.
That's true.
So,
no, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're a techie and you understand the history of Apple, you're rolling on the ground right now laughing.
Yeah, right.
I'm telling you, these jokes are just coming fast.
They are just, yeah. Right.
Well, getting serious, today is the TIES conference, and it looks like the executive director there is in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, man, like, I couldn't believe this.
I know. I was shocking when I saw it. I'm like, what?
Why don't you recap it, Tim?
And their conference starts today, I believe,
yeah, right?
Right.
Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
Yeah. So apparently some of the funds were mismanaged, and he's left. I'm sure there'll be some whatever criminal charges or what have you levied, but it doesn't look good on the organization.
Yeah, I don't know if they I think the article that I read said that they didn't know if it rose to the level of criminal indictments or anything, but at the same time it was like,
it looks a little fishy.
Looks a little sketchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the telephone company they're no longer using, they paid $47,000. What's with that? And then the bags of money at the state fair. That's also good.
That's bizarre.
Well, the state fair is expensive. So if you're out there, you know, doing the parking, I didn't even know they had a parking lot there, but apparently they do. And the people in the parking lot, they took home bags of $500 or $1,000.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's not what the article said. The article said $1,500 bonuses, and then one employee took home a bag of money, it said in the article.
Yeah.
Let's not elaborate.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
They're Mr. National Enquirer.
Well, the executive director, though, Betty Schweitzer, she's the one that she'd been there 20 years, and she was in charge of this, and she retired on September 17th, nearly two years before the end of her contract, according to a copy of her retirement agreement. But it's because before the audit was complete, she bailed.
So I thought of you, Phil, at the end of the story when Dr. Snyder from here in Lakeville was quoted.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Did you see that? Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I didn't get down
she,
that.
She knew that TIES was going through what she called some strategic changes, but did not know the details until the Star Tribune sent her a copy of the story.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oops. Right. Oops. Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you, I know this is gonna sound weird, but I have experience in both of those projects that you spoke of in a different life. I was involved annually at the Iowa State Fair as a vendor, so I can tell you about that experience. But I can also tell you that I worked for a company in Nebraska that when I first got there had no idea how much they were spending on phone service. Had no idea. I spent a week going through their records on phone service and found out that we were paying for lines we didn't even know we had.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and the whole state fair thing is that's pretty much the currency of any state fair is straight up cash,
right?
Straight up cash. And there is absolutely there's almost no way to keep track of how much money actually changes hands with vendors, parking attendants. That's right. There is absolutely, there is no foolproof system. So
yeah.
I thought you were going to say you were a third grade teacher.
No, I was in third grade once. Does that count?
No.
Okay. No, that's not to say I'm not saying I'm making excuses for anybody, you know, crappy oversight, but I got to tell you that both of those things are challenges.
Well, I went to high school with a guy whose uncle ran a parking lot. He was like the the manager of this parking lot during state fair time.
Yeah.
And this guy shall remain nameless. Let's call him Tony.
Okay.
Tony would do one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me. So literally every other car that came in, he'd stick the money in his pocket.
Yep.
And I said, did you really? And he goes, yeah, I mean, nobody knows and blah, blah, blah. And he said, and I said, well, how much did you take? And he said, well, I got like $1,500. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. And you know, you work like a 10-hour day. It's not bad money when you're in high school and it's the '70s.
It's thousands of dollars every year.
Oh my God.
You know, I was involved in the state fair in the media business, you know, years ago in Iowa for 13 straight years. And those people that had homes around the state fairgrounds, I mean, they would make their year by just opening up their lawns to parking.
Really?
It was insane. It was insane the amount of money that changes hands in that situation. And it's very difficult to track because it is all cash. So,
right.
So anyway, yeah, it's really too bad. But I've been to the Ties facility, and I got to tell you, that sucker is nice. I don't know if it's, $3.7 million nice, but it's nice.
Yeah. Well, I've been there too, and I've been there for some trainings that a client put on. And, you know, it feels like they got way too much space there.
Yeah.
For the number of people they have. But
planning on the future.
True.
They won't run out of space anytime soon.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they can get it on track because I think that there's a real place for that sort of a, you know, the collaborative investment by the school system. So hopefully they'll find a manager that can bring it all back in line and really realize the potential of that service. So.
Well, and then they have an audit process that works.
Yes. And not take bags of money at the state fair. Anyway.
Anywho, Tim.
Yeah.
Best
good
Buy.
Good shopping day on Black Friday, apparently.
Yeah.
Although the numbers, the final numbers kind of said that most of the money was sucked into Thanksgiving, actually.
Right.
Very good online. Everyone up online and locally here, both Target and Best Buy did well, except Best Buy's site kind of couldn't handle all the traffic.
Right.
So it went down several times during Black Friday.
Well, you know, that's one of the things when I had gone to Best Buy at one point, you know, and they have their Best Buy inventory models, and then they have Best Buy marketplace models. And so I'm assuming that they're batch processing this stuff and caching it from all their marketplace people. But still, you know, if you're going through and you're slicing and dicing and sorting inventory based on whatever parameters, that's a lot of database calls.
Yep.
And I can't imagine you do that times, you know, 10,000 concurrent users, what that looks like from a performance standpoint.
Yeah, they're definitely playing with the big boys, and the big boys being Amazon, who handle that kind of traffic all the time.
Yeah, so. Well, they have all their own. Yeah, they have all their own regional data centers. Well, see, I wonder if Best Buy, I can't see any Akamai tags. But I wonder if they're using, obviously they're probably using content delivery networks, but I wonder if they're using anything that they can cache their application out on the edge, because obviously Akamai provides that sort of service. That might help, but
yeah. Well, I'm sure they learned a lot of a lot of lessons on that day, and they weren't the only ones. Kohl's and Topshop also went down.
Oh, I didn't hear that. Oh,
yeah. Yep.
Huh,
so, you know, overall, it's because a lot of Black Friday shoppers have gone to shopping online, particularly with mobile devices. And I think that's putting a lot of new strain on these websites.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what they do next year. But, in the net of the whole Black Friday, Thanksgiving opening early kind of thing was, you know, sales weren't up that dramatically over the year before. In fact, you could make an argument that they're sort of a wash with last year, which wasn't a barn burner. So people have a way to go, but the word on the street is that, people are more savvy now, more savvy shoppers, than they expect deals all the way through the holiday season. So the next big high watermark was what they've been calling Super Saturday, which is the last Saturday before Christmas, which is the 20th of December this year. So that'll be the last like really big test of these websites.
Driven by overly busy, lazy people like myself.
Right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of lazy people, I think that's the best. I think Best Buy did something that'll make it much make it easier for people to find out what's in stock.
Yeah. Let's go from last week. You guys didn't have a show last week, right?
Right. No. Right.
Okay. Well, yeah. I wasn't available.
Yeah.
So I guess
we did, Tim. We talked about you. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, I went to look for a show to listen to and there was nothing there yesterday.
We decided in it. Steve wanted to sleep in.
We canned it.
Too much tryptophan.
So anyway, this is from last week. I found this story and put it in with the if then then that integration, which is kind of geeky and interesting.
Well, and for those that don't know what it is that are listening, IFTTT, if this then that, is a website where you can actually create recipes. So you can say if this happens with this application, like Gmail, let's say, then do this. Send me an SMS or slap my kid. I don't know, whatever you can trigger. And Best Buy has created a notification in their Best Buy channel for the Moto 360, for example. So it'll tell you if the Moto 360 is available at the store near you.
Right. And you can do whatever. So you could say Smart Things widget A, when that comes in stock.
Flash the light.
Right. Yeah. Well, then they could send you a notification back via text or email or however you like it. I mean, if you're looking for something that's in high demand, that's out of stock often, that's kind of a handy service.
Yeah, I thought it was very clever, actually, because then they don't have to build it in the house and build in all the notification capability, even though they probably should, because that would drive people to the website if you could say, yeah, I want to know when this thing's in stock.
Just think how difficult that would be because they've got so many SKUs.
Exactly.
And so by having the consumer actually do that thing, they have a few items that are like set up for examples, I guess, of some items. Like I think there was a game that I was interested in, the Super Smash Brothers for the DS. That one, it was my tester and it works well. And every time that it's back in stock, I get a little notification in my IFTT app.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So, anywho.
There you are.
It's innovation. It's in Minnesota.
It's true.
Yeah, and I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So, but I see that Julio did an article, Target invites a virtual holiday play with online games that you can play in your mobile browser, but it looks like they change when
you're in the store.
When you're in the store.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I thought, this is great for all those 11-year-old shoppers. Right?
That's right. That are into ice fishing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got a kick out of Julio's. It's a chance to play with Target's adorable doggy mascot. It's like, well, really, Julio? Adorable doggy mascot?
Well, I don't know.
And it's like almost like, hey, could you call our mascot adorable, please? Okay.
Well, it is pretty cute. You got to say.
Okay. It's cute. Yes. Yeah. You're right. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Yes. I interrupted Steve just to be a smart ass. Sorry about that.
I love that though.
I do.
but it's, some of this stuff I look at and just think, okay, well, who other than the kids, Who's going to be staring at their smartphone playing a game while they're shopping at Target?
I don't know. Kids.
Yeah.
All right.
It's kids.
But that's inquisitive technology reporters. I could see Julio.
I could definitely see
in the Julio store with his iPhone 6 Plus playing this game. It's definitely true. See that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well.
There you have it. So it's an interesting, I think it's, once again, this push by Target to develop mobile strategy, mobile games, keep that mobile thing going. So yeah, they've got some good stuff popolighting.
Well, it's too bad there isn't any place where you can go get training, for
creating mobile stuff. There's another good segue. Good job. Very good. Yeah. We were talking about the Smart Factory, Mike Bollinger's place over there on Harriet in lovely uptown. They've made a little pivot on how they're doing their business.
They're coming after you, Phil.
Are they? Oh, sorry.
Well, they are. No. Sounds like it, right?
How's that?
Oh, I guess it's training program.
I don't teach.
Training program. Yeah, okay. They're not coming after you.
Which is a great space. I don't know if you have you guys been to the Smart Factory? Have you checked out that space?
No, I've just seen photos of it that Mike's put nice online.
Place. Yeah. Very nice place. So, and he opens it for other things. He's offered the space for Mobile Twin Cities, as a matter of fact. But anyway, they've gone from, you know, doing the, 8-12 week courses to putting together training sessions for business, or as we call it now, the enterprise.
Yep.
So,
it makes sense.
Yeah.
There's probably more money to be made in that arena.
Well, running a school is difficult. That's all there is to it, you know, because, you know, getting students and then getting the students to pay and then, you know, getting the teachers, it's not an easy task to undertake. So, but I thought it was a brilliant move on Mike's part to build that sort of a space where, and provide that space where you basically can train people that you can ultimately hire. I think that's, was a great idea for him.
Well, or empower an organization to understand really what it takes
right.
to build exactly. a world-class application. And then do you want to hire that in-house or develop that in-house? Or do you want to, you know, outsource it to a firm that knows what they're doing?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're not even aware, if you're not really cognizant of everything that's going on in the space to actually deliver great mobile experiences, then it's tough. Does he have, or do they have published anything about these enterprise workshops?
I don't know. I haven't checked, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Just curious.
I didn't know I had homework. I apologize.
Well, Phil, come on, man. You're the expert.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Anyway, I again, you know, I'm a big fan of Mike's, and I think that he puts together some great stuff. So
yeah, he's a good guy.
Yep. So here, okay, Tim.
Yeah, this is Al Grandstander Franken.
No, I was going to ask you. I was just going to ask you, how is Steve going to segue into this one? But
yeah, I don't know.
Now you've done it. So there you go.
Right. Now, if Graham would hear it, he would agree with me.
Stop.
So now, after Franken, I think rightly piled on to Uber with their God view privacy issues, he's doing the same thing with Lyft now. I think it's because he doesn't like those big pink mustaches on the car.
Well, I don't like those big pink mustaches on the car. So, you know, that, but
you, I guess, so I guess.
You're joking about him being a grandstander because you said it was good that he asked those questions of Uber, but
Uber's a grandstander.
You're grandstanding now because he's asking a similar service, the same sorts of questions.
Well, yeah, I guess. I think he's just trying to side with the taxi unions personally, but I don't know.
No, I think he's sticking to his concept of trying to protect the privacy of his constituents. So that's I think more important than he's very involved in tech privacy and tech, you know, rights and, you know, copyright infringement. You know that.
Yeah. So. But he hasn't said squat about the, barely squat about the whole NSA
I know.
Thing. And it just drives me crazy. You know, if he really wants to make some waves, that's the way to do it.
Okay. Well, he used to be a comic and a writer in Hollywood.
Yeah,
you would think that hack of the Sony Pictures company would be something he would comment on.
That's true.
But has anybody asked him about it?
I don't know. I mean, if I had an interview, I would say, hey, what do you think of that? I mean, you could see, first run movies like Fury still in the theaters.
Oh yeah,
which is a very good movie, by the way.
I think saw it. Very good movie, by the way. Yes. You should call him and ask him. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a pretty good segue into that next story, though.
Oh, that is.
Isn't
a good,
this, that's right.
Isn't this the most ridiculous story that North Koreans hackers have hacked Sony Pictures? Because of this new James Franco and Seth Rogen, Rogen, what is it? Rogen.
Yeah, Seth Rogen.
The interview, which looks like it might be funny.
That, my friend, is a PR agent at work, right there.
I think so. But
wait a minute, Sony got hacked. don't we have a movie coming out about Korea? Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah,
tie it together.
Let's blame it on the North Koreans.
I mean, my dad's got a barn. Let's put on a show.
How do you become a North Korean cyber hacker? Because you know they hardly have any computers laying around or electricity to run them
that you know of.
I know.
You know, it's pretty funny. It could be that the entire, North Korean population actually lives underground. That's why you don't see a lot of electricity. I'm just saying it's all underground.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, they hacked their system. They took lots of, private information and digital copies of movies, which are now on the internet for anyone to download if they so desire.
Yeah,
no, it could. Could of course, illegally, as I might point out.
That could also have been done by any 13-year-old that really wants to see a movie. So,
yeah, I don't know. It seemed like a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal.
And it was entertaining, some of the stories that came out about the pay. You know, like the top of the company is a bunch of white guys kind of deal.
Oh, but yeah.
Anywho. Wow. That was a big story.
Well, because of all the hacking stuff, I actually had two family members send me an article that they found about doxing. And so I thought, okay, I'll go see if I can find a decent article on doxing. And doxing is where some online idiot troll will put your personal info on the net, publish right. It. So your home address, phone number, financial records, whatever. And so I found a halfway decent article in Computer World, Doxing Defense, Remove Your Personal Info from Data Brokers. And so I started to scroll down here and I thought, okay, this is really interesting. But what's funny is I've found people who have almost no digital footprint whatsoever, like a potential landlord for my daughter's place where she was going to go rent. And anyway, it's a long story, but I wanted to find this guy's phone number. And I literally couldn't find it anywhere until I searched on he and his wife's name in quotes on Google and found a PDF where they had invested in a company and all their stuff was in this PDF. And so I had his phone number and I called the guy and we had a nice chat. But the point is that even if you get rid of all your, or try to get rid of all your data that's out there, there's no way. I mean, it's just, it's, the horse has left the barn, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's tough. I don't know what to recommend that people do.
Well, I mean, have you sat down and done this, Steve? Have you done the doxing thing? Tim, have you?
Nope.
To get rid of it?
Not. Yeah.
I did it at Spokio, and you got to jump through a lot of hoops, and I don't think it's effective. But yeah. my stuff's out there everywhere.
Yeah,
so I mean,
yeah, exactly. Well, I just popped on White Pages to check, I guess I'd never searched for myself on White Pages before. And for years, I had an unlisted phone number, so it was tougher to get this information than we kind of, since don't really worry about it much anymore. And they went ahead and listed it, but I did notice that they've got my phone number wrong. So that's kind of interesting.
Huh. Now is White Pages, is that for people like you that are in the top 1%?
Hardy har har.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
But it is kind of interesting I don't know if you've looked on White Pages before or looked for your name on White Pages before. There's now a section, I didn't realize this, that say people you may know. It's kind of interesting that, they've linked you to people. And in this case, it links to people that owned the house before we bought it, which is interesting.
Well,
There's also the, you click on a button that shows the neighbors around you and it's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is. Well, and there's one particular site that I went on and I clicked on my own name and here it said all the people that I was linked to, or potentially linked to, including my aunt and uncle who are in their late 70s up in Hillsboro, North Dakota, with a completely different last name, of course, or on my mother's side. And I thought, whoa, wait a minute. How did that connect? That's the only one I can't figure out. How the hell did that connection get made? That was pretty amazing. But it's scary. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's just, you know, just imagine the social graph that's connecting us all. And that's all in our metadata. So it's stored in a nice facility out there in Bluffdale, Utah, by a small firm called the National Security Agency.
Yeah.
It's all out there. Yeah.
Twice you've brought up the NSA today.
I have.
Are you feeling bad? Are you feeling.
Me?
Dirty? Yeah.
No.
Just kidding.
No.
So yeah, it is kind of interesting, but the doxing thing would definitely be, you know, pack a lunch and spend the day, because it's going to take you a while. And right. I think that if you look at that article that Steve provides a link for in the show notes, you'll see that a lot of that is, there's somewhat of a risk there, because many times to get, you know, to opt out of these services, you basically have to give up information to opt out. So if, you know, you have to give up your password or your email address and, you know, that sort of thing. So you kind of have to be careful there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I put something in the show notes that I thought was a big deal, especially if anybody is interested in the Internet of Things and yes. what's happening in the space. There's always been this, In this is really geeky, but in terms of geeks, there's been sort of this dissing of a protocol called Zigbee.
Yes.
Oh, yes. If you want to have something that works great, use Z-Wave. And there's been this back and forth. But Zigbee came out with 3.0, a new spec, and they've shored up a lot of the historical failings in the protocol. And so it's going to be really interesting, because it's less expensive to implement, apparently, on things that I've read. And there's also a low energy version of it. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how these protocols end up making it easier and easier and easier to make devices and things. So maybe
isn't that one of the big issues with the Internet of Things, is there's so many different protocols?
Yes,
absolutely. It's overlapping, and it's not like you can plug and play all these correct. Different protocols together. And
correct.
It would seem to me that you'd want to have a device, you know, each individual device would have some sort of intelligence into it, so it could independently work, as opposed to having these central servers like the Smart Things Hub or the Wink Hub that kind of do that stuff, you know?
Well,
and are any of these in moving that direction, where you know the light switch that controls the light across a room, you know, can be in itself smart and doesn't need a hub to interface with my smartphone?
Well, there's got to be some kind of control mechanism. See, Digi, the company that's based here, they bought another company called Etherios. And Etherios is now a division of Digi. Well, the reason they bought Etherios is that Etherios had already in place a platform with an API set and everything that essentially handles every protocol. And so they didn't really care one way or the other, because right now corporations are implementing this stuff. They're trying to figure out which horse do we bet on? You know, which direction do we move? Well, if they take on and use Etherios from Digi, it doesn't matter. You know, if they put in a whole bunch of sensors, that are Zigbee, and they decide later we should have gone Z-Wave and made a mesh network out of it, doesn't matter. Stuff's still going to work. And so that's why the platform plays are a big deal, and who's going to win. You know, is it in the consumer space, is it going to be HomeKit from Apple? And it very well may be that. So
I doubt it, because you know, not being cross-platform, I think it'll be an issue.
I do too.
Not everyone will want to use an iPhone or an iPad to control their house automation. You know, so I think the one that will win will be whoever can be as good as whatever Apple's going to do, but will work on any, you know, at least iOS and Android.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with you.
So smart things, I don't think they're out of the game by any
stretch. Oh gosh, no. No way.
Uh-uh.
Nope. Not at all.
They're in good shape.
They could be the winner. You never know. Although that Samsung influence, who knows? We'll keep an eye on it.
Well, but you know, Samsung's got a lot of skin in the game already. I mean, they, when you look at what they're trying to do with, you know, their appliances and so on, they're trying to make them smart. And so it'll be interesting to see how SmartThings fits into that.
Right.
So,
yeah, a lot of more resources, that's for sure.
So this thing about Google making a move on Microsoft's turf in the workplace, you know, that they're offering bigger commissions to third parties, I thought was very interesting, because Microsoft, there's nobody in on the planet that does a better job of partnering than Microsoft. I mean, they know it inside out, backwards and forwards. And, you know, Google for work, they've really been going after Microsoft Live 365. And it's going to be interesting to see who wins there. I just think that that the Achilles heel for Google for work is Google Spreadsheets.
Yeah, I think that if you compare what, you know, Google Docs, which we all use, in fact, we use it here for the show, versus Office 365, the Microsoft offering is much superior. There's all sorts of benefits, like you can download you know, native apps for Windows and Macs and run them like you've always run them, which you can't do with Google Docs.
Right.
So I think that if you're looking objectively at these two, that, you know, Office is a pretty good deal, but it's more money. So, you know, I think that people will gravitate toward what will do the job and is the cheapest.
Yeah. So there may be some class of users at a corporation that would be perfect to have them use Google apps, because they don't need pivot tables in their spreadsheets, for example.
Yeah, but I think that if you're in a big enterprise, you know, you're going to need the power that Excel gives you. You're going to probably want the power that PowerPoint has over Google Sheets, not Google Sheets, Google Presentations, whatever they call their presentation thing. Right. So you're going to probably want that at some level. And so, you know, Microsoft is getting very aggressive, particularly at the low end, of driving people into Office 365, which is their subscription product, their way of, you know, for $70 a year, getting, you know, people to use their cloud services, but also gives them the flexibility of using native apps too.
Well,
which a lot of us like, you know.
Yep. Well, that's why I was so enamored with a new product that was just introduced called the HP Stream, which is a little laptop for $199. And clearly Microsoft's going after Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And
well, this, if you look at it, I have a Chromebook 14, which is by HP, and it looks exactly the same as these. So what they're doing is they're taking their, basically the Chromebook specs, and sticking Windows into it.
Right.
And, you know, for, you know, $200, $250, I'd probably get the one that's $230. It's not a bad little deal. I mean, the quality of the machine's pretty good. The keyboard's pretty good. When this Chromebook gives out, I might think very seriously about getting one of these.
Well, especially they're throwing in a terabyte of free cloud storage for a year.
Yeah,
it comes with Office 365 Personal for a year. I mean, it's I just, honest to God, when I saw this thing, as I just thought, you know, if I used it for nothing other than just a little Skype machine, how great would that be?
And you know, I know that Windows 8 is taking a lot of lumps. Windows 8.1 is actually really good, especially in tablet mode. And they do have, you know, they don't have as many apps as iOS or Android, but they have a fair amount of native apps for that Metro environment, or modern, whatever they call it these days.
Right.
So, you know, it's a contender.
So are you saying that they're still hanging on?
I think so. And I think that Satya Nadella is definitely, he's shaking things up.
Well, no, I mean in the mobile space. You think they're still hanging on?
Not in the phone space, or in the tablet space. But what's interesting is they've got a very compelling value proposition, especially if you look at the Surface Pro, where you have a tablet form factor, but you have the ability to run desktop when you need a desktop. And no one has anything like that. You can't get it with a, you can sort of get it with a Chromebook, kind of, because mm-hmm. you can run some Android apps in it, but it's kludgy and it's not as good as the, you know, what Windows is giving you, which is, you know, no compromise desktop if that's what you need, plus a Metro tablet environment for times when you want to use it just as a tablet and a detachable keyboard. I don't think you'll ever see Apple do anything like this. You probably won't see Google do anything like this either. So I think they have carved out a position. Now, whether it's too late for them or not is to be seen. But I think we talked about this at the time when it came out that Nadella was going to be licensing Windows for free for devices under $100, I think it is. I thought, man, this is desperation move. But the way it's rolled out, I think that it may not be a bad move. And getting more desktops out there, getting more laptops out there, and convertibles out there, I think will be good for their long-term viability.
Well, and it's going to really drive their cloud services.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's a brilliant move. But
yeah.
Well, okay, so we got to do a segue because we're going to run out of time today, believe it or not. So I want to segue into this AT&T throttling the unlimited data accounts. Here's why.
So do you have unlimited data?
Yeah. Yeah, because we're grandfathered into AT&T, right? Yeah,
sure. That's right. Why I threw the story in.
Just to get him riled up.
Needle him.
So my daughter and I are sitting next to each other at Thanksgiving. And she looks at me and she goes, you know, Dad, what the? And she says, look at this. And she shows me the speed because she ran the Ookla speed test on her phone. She's got an iPhone 6.
Right.
And it's literally edge speeds. I mean, she's getting like 1.2 megabit per second down. And, you know, and I'm getting, 20 megabit per second down and because we're on Wi-Fi and or on LTE, excuse me. Or whatever the speed was. But anyway, I'm like 10x faster than she is. And so she says, what the hell's going on? She goes, honest to God. And I go, you know, I just read an article that AT&T is being sued because they are throttling the unlimited data people. And I said, where are you at right now? So we pull up the AT&T account and 10 days in, she's at 6 gigs. She's already used. And I go, how the hell are you using so much data? And she goes, Dad, I listen to music, Spotify, all day long. I'm in my car. I listen to Spotify. I'm listening at work because she can, because she the work she does. And so she says, I'm just going through the data like crazy. And so the kicker was that Verizon was at Best Buy. She works at Best Buy HQ. The Verizon was at Best Buy, and she's talking to the Verizon rep about, you know, okay, so what if I cancel? What can I get from you guys? And she's thinking about changing. So they're throttling though.
Yeah, this is sneaky though. I mean, they're this throttling just to get people off of their unlimited plans.
Sure they are. It's exactly what they're doing.
Which is very sneaky.
Yep. Well, especially since we have a family plan.
Not as sneaky as what T-Mobile did. Which was they were doing the throttling, of course, which, you know, you don't have unlimited with T-Mobile. I had it, which was actually truly unlimited, but I changed plans recently and I got rid of it because I don't really use that much data anyway. But what they would do is they would be throttling for every site except for the speed test site. So you do a speed test and you go, holy crap, look at that speed. And then you go to Minovate and you go, like, well, I can't listen to this podcast or download it. It's too slow.
Yeah.
Now that is sneaky.
You think about that. That's kind of brilliant though. Yes, that very is. Sneaky, but that's that kind of brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
I'll have to look for the link to that story.
Yeah.
You know what time I think it is good for though?
I think it is time.
What is it, Phil?
I'm feeling a mite insecure.
Steve's security tip of the week.
The horses are back.
Well, okay, so this is going to be a real quick one. I've had so many discussions about staying secure and shopping securely and banking securely and all of that stuff and the VPN stuff and blah, 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 but not a lot about how do I know if my computer is infected or not? And how do I know if I have a keylogger that's hiding? And what can I do to stay safe? Well, so I'm trolling around Amazon and I find this thumb drive called ZeusGuard. And ZeusGuard, $25. And you put it in your USB port and you boot from this thumb drive. And now you're in a malware-free, Linux-based operating system.
Always monitored by Zeus operating system.
No, it's not.
Right. Is it like Kali Linux or something like that?
I'm not sure because I haven't dug into it that much.
It's probably one of these hacker distributions.
No, it's not.
I would imagine. No, I mean a hacker in the network vulnerability detector. Malicious black hat guy.
Well, and then they pull they pull out all of the superfluous services. And so anyway, but the bottom line is if you want to, I'll put some links in the show notes. You can also make your own. So you can use Tails, which is an open source way of making, just buying a thumb drive and making your own. And you can boot from that. And that's another way of being secure. And so then, you know, if you're using somebody else's laptop or you go to somebody's house and you're using their computer or things of that nature, you know, a lot of the public computers, their USB drives are disabled. So you can't boot from them, but, it's a really easy, great way to stay safe. So that's my tip.
Good tip.
Nice tip.
All right.
You know, as tips go, we kind of had two of them though today, because between this and the doxing, you know, we got it covered.
You know, you're right.
It's kind of nice.
You're very wise, Phil.
So true. Anyway, don't you forget it, buddy. Okay, the cool things. Let's talk about the cool things over the week. Tim? Yeah.
Okay, well, we were talking a little bit earlier about Windows 8, and I was looking for a Office 365 subscription, and they're around town, $69. You get a card, you know, Best Buy or wherever. Online, you can get them slightly cheaper, but I found that you can get them at our friends at Micro Center for $59, but you're actually buying a Windows 8.1 tablet at the same time. Mm-hmm. Now, the tablet is no great shakes. I mean, it's better than you would expect a $60 tablet to be, but if you need an Office 365 subscription, you get a card with it. It's not tied to the unit, and you get the personal, which is one download for a desktop and one for a tablet. And, I think it's a great way to get a subscription to 365 and, you know, you get a little tablet that works for things like Skype.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have hundreds of them in stock. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm using it here on Skype and I think it works quite well.
Huh.
And what's funny is this is not like the RT version. This is full Windows 8.1. The problem with it is that it has only one gigabyte of RAM and 16 gigs of storage, which of course most of it's used up with the operating system. So you have very, very little for storage. It does have an SD card, and you can do some wizardry with an SD card of relocating some of the files over to it. So it is manageable, but this is not something you'd get your kid or your mother or whatever,
because
they're going to run out of space like almost immediately. But if you know what you're doing, it actually works out pretty well. And it's surprisingly good quality for $59.
Can't you, because it says in the specs that you can expand it up to 64 gigs with a micro SD card. Can't you set it up so that you're always saving everything to that card?
Yeah, that's what you do. You just put symbolic links to all of your downloads and data and all that stuff.
Yep.
But the problem is that Metro apps have to go on the internal storage. So that's that limits you.
Okay.
You can install stuff to external storage for on the desktop side. So that's an option for you. So, I mean, there are ways to get around it, but you have to be a geek, I think, to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you wanted to get this for, you know, for something that would be used in productivity, they have a model that's 8 inches, that's 32 gigs and two gigabytes of RAM that I think would be a much better deal, but it's twice the money. It's like $140, something like that.
Yeah. Cool.
But anyway, if you're looking for 365, it's $10 less and you get a free tablet at Micro Center.
Very nice.
And you just ask for them up at the front, just like the USB drives and stuff right. That sell, because it's their own brand.
Got it. Got
it. All Phil, right. How about your cool thing, buddy?
I know I may be getting too broad in my concept of cool thing of the week, but those of us that can remember the space program and its roots, you know, the Apollo space program, especially. And all the epic things that Apollo accomplished. It was really cool to see the Orion space capsule lift off the other morning. I thought that was very cool. Yeah. It was very reminiscent of those starting days of NASA. Much more high tech, obviously, probably a lot faster, but it was interesting to see that. And, you know, I hope that it does spark the space program back up again. So they're hoping to take people, this capsule will take people to Mars, hopefully by 2021.
Very cool.
That was cool. I was happy it didn't blow up on the launch pad.
I think we all were too.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me you didn't think about that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think you have to.
Yeah, have to every time they go up.
Yeah. Yeah. Every.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole. That's a bomb strapped to a capsule. You know. Not good, but yeah, it is incredible. It was kind of interesting, though. Did you guys notice? You know, I think the big thing that everybody noticed when you went from the Saturn rocket to the space shuttle was the speed by which the space shuttle took off compared to the Saturn rocket. You know, the Saturn rocket was a very slow ascent, whereas the shuttle was much quicker. Why is the Orion slower again? Does anybody have any idea why that is? Just not as much oomph in the rockets?
Well, I don't know. I would assume that to keep costs down, and since they're not launching humans,
right?
There's probably less weight because you don't need all the stuff to keep life support going, and no, so maybe they don't need as much fuel to push it up there, so it just goes up slower.
I think it's because Stanley Kubrick's not doing the special effects for the launches anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Like he did with the moon landing.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why it looks so good.
Yeah, that's a hologram. I don't know if you knew that.
No, it was all little models, you know?
Yeah. No. The current shuttles, they're all holograms.
Oh, they are?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They're just projected against the sky.
Have you guys seen Interstellar by any chance?
Yes. No, I haven't yet.
Excellent, excellent movie.
I'm going to go there tonight, I think.
But I had to laugh at that one scene in the school.
No. Yes. No. Hey. No,
I'm
spoilers.
Not
going to
give you a spoiler, but right. When they did that, I laughed out loud.
There was a reference to that whole, there was a reference.
I laughed out loud in the theater.
Okay.
All right. That was hilarious.
So anyway.
Yes. Okay. So
there is no spoiler on this. Dude.
Okay.
But it's a good movie. Everyone should go see it.
Very good movie. Yeah.
So my cool thing is something that was just released by the Skype co-founder, Yannis Fries, who's backing this new communications network called Wire. And it's out now it's kind of like a Skype-like product for voice and video and sharing of music and YouTube videos and yada, yada, yada. No screen sharing. But they are going to have a WebRTC, the real-time communications, so you'll be able to run this in just a web browser, and so that'll be good. But, you know, I look at this and I think to myself, look at how long it took for Skype to become ubiquitous, and what are they going to have to do to make Wire a big deal? Because, you know, there are so many options now for voice. I mean,
right.
Well, they're going to have to be better than what you can get with Skype. And there is an opportunity because Skype is not foolproof by any means.
And not encrypted.
Okay. Well, with a bad, yeah, but I mean, yeah. It's, I think performance is going to be the big issue. If it performs better, I think Skype can be unseated from its dominant position.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that they don't support Windows.
Yet. Yeah. I know. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, they're going to do a browser. So it's iOS, Android, and Mac OS 10.
Right.
And then the browser is coming soon, but there's no like Windows on here. Which, yeah, you'd think that it's funny because they sold Skype to Microsoft.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
You'd think they would have, I don't know. They would throw them a bone. Come on.
Oh, man.
I guess they're saying, well, if you're on Windows, just use Skype.
Yeah. Yep.
There you go.
It looks good, though. I like the design. Very, very sleek.
Sleek?
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that Mac app. That Mac app looks beautiful.
Well, it sounds great, too. I mean, it really does. I mean, when you're in it.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Will we be moving to the...
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, upcoming events. We talked to the Ties is happening today.
That's right.
And
I'm sure there's some good hallway discussions.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Not to mention a fine tap dancing presentation.
Hey, do you got a cash for me from the state fair?
That's right.
I didn't get my bag of cash.
Yeah, where's mine? That's right.
Where's mine?
And then
I want my bag of cash.
Mobile Twin Cities on the 8th.
Yep, coming up Monday night.
And, yeah.
Be there, aloha.
And other than that, I know nothing.
Anything new on Mobile March? Oh, Mobile March organizer.
Still on the 26th. We are now, the site is updated, by the way. Thank you very much. I know you guys gave me a hard time about that. But yeah, we are accepting applications for speakers. Please just click on the Be a Speaker link and get it to us. We'll be accepting applicants through, I think, into January. So we'd love to hear from you. We've got some really kind of exciting things that we're planning. We focus on trying to secure solid keynote presentations, but I think you'll enjoy another day at the Earl Brown Center. Also, it's not publicized. The Eventbrite site is up and running, and there is, you can now get discount tickets for the event for just $85 for the whole day. Includes lunch, breakfast, snacks, the whole thing.
Sweet.
So take a peek at it, but we'll look for the press release next week, guys. So
sounds good.
All right, you guys.
And I want to thank everyone for listening to
the Minivate Gang podcast.
Take care.
Have a good week. Saved a dime.